This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
That'll wake you up on a Wednesday morning. Good morning to you. If you're just shaking out the cobwebs, well, it's time to get with the program. We are hopping right in this hour. If you missed it on Tuesday evening, only one, by virtue of the writer's vote, only one gets into baseball's hallowed Hall of Fame. David Ortiz gets in with about 78% of the vote, but no Roger Clemens, no Barry Bonds. Not surprised about Curt Schilling or Sammy Sosa, but we're talking about the end of the road as it pertains to several of those guys, at least by virtue of the traditional method. So big news coming from the Hall of Fame. And no doubt Big Papi is able to command that stage in Cooperstown all to himself, if his shirt on Tuesday is any indication. So happy for him. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Every score change during Super Bowl 56, someone wins $50,000 in the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free at rocketmortgagesquares.com. So we don't generally start hours with interviews, but we love David Sampson, longtime Marlins president, because he is an early riser. And not only is he an early riser, but he doesn't need time to get his thoughts together. He's raring to go as soon as his feet hit the floor. So from CBS Sports HQ, and also I do not see your podcast here on, oh yes it is, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Got it. Good morning to you, David. Thanks so much as always for joining us first thing in the morning. I was looking at your Twitter before the announcement came out on Tuesday evening, and this was your tweet: Hall of Fame announcement in just a few minutes. Get ready, Papi. No plaque for you. Is that like no soup for you? No plaque for you, Roger, Barry, and Curt. David, why were you so sure those would be the results?
I love that you got the no soup for you reference. That makes everything worthwhile, because I love leaving little eggs in each tweet. So it was clear to me from the beginning that those men were not going to get into the Hall of Fame from the writers, and that David Ortiz had the best chance. So it was either going to be him or nobody. And the reason that I knew that it would be David Ortiz is that the Hall of Fame could not announce nobody this year. They need an induction weekend with a big name, with an anchor tenant. That is their weekend where they get their revenue for the year. And post-COVID, with the shutdown, the lockdown, it was so critical to have a big weekend up in Cooperstown. And Big Papi was really the only candidate who would give them that weekend, who had the possibility of induction. Therefore, I knew that it would happen. The reason that Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are not ever going to be in the Hall of Fame, and that neither is Alex Rodriguez, who was on the ballot for the first time,
right,
is that they are different than other players who are associated with PEDs. They are different in their continued line about their involvement, in their continued effort to cover up their involvement, and in their continued effort to thumb their nose at those who believe they were involved. And you could tell me that A-Rod's different, Amy, because he came clean. But A-Rod is in a worse position than all of them, because he's coming from a place of unbelievable lying and cover up and lawsuits and all of the efforts he went to deny that he did it before having no choice but to come clean and start dating J-Lo as part of his reclamation rehabilitation. And so it just won't work, and it shouldn't work. And it's such an interesting debate that we can have as to whether or not they should be in the Hall of Fame. But congratulations to David Ortiz, who is.
Well, let's talk about Big Papi for a second. Three-time World Series champion, 10-time All-Star. We know what he did in the postseason, one of those clutch athletes that really rose to the occasion. And I love that he thanked the Yankees for bringing out the best in him. But I also think it's fascinating and maybe a potential turn for the Hall in that he's primarily a DH, not solely, but he gets into the Hall of Fame as a DH. We're not talking about a guy who's in the top 10 all time in terms of home runs. He is in the top 20, but the impact he made on the game's biggest stages, and I would think this too, the fact that his personality for a while, larger than life, the loud bat to go along with it, but unabashedly Big Papi and David Ortiz, for a while, he was the face and the ambassador for Major League Baseball that the sport so desperately needed. I don't know if the writers consider that, but it seems to me, as I was saying before, this guy, if anybody can stand up there at Cooperstown by himself and command the audience, it's Big Papi.
Right, and this is he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, quote-unquote. He did not have a first ballot Hall of Fame career. One of the things that bothers me about him getting in yesterday, and I'm very happy for him, but there are many players who are better than he who had to wait a number of years before getting in. And so normally you reserve first ballot status for like the Mount Rushmore
right.
of players. But in this case, as I said, there was there were so many other things going on that pushed Ortiz to 77.9%. There's so many politics involved. There's who's on the ballot. There are factors that actually impact whether or not a player gets in and when that player gets in a particular year.
Ugh.
And this was the year that Ortiz was going to get in. Now, all of that said, he had a Hall of Fame career, even though he was a non-tendered player, by the way. Don't forget that he was non-tendered, which means he was released by the Minnesota Twins.
Right.
So you're talking about a player who, it's not that he was this highly touted player who stayed great and had this Hall of Fame trajectory his whole career. He actually was terrible and then became what he became. And being on the Red Sox helped, being the spokesperson for Boston Strong and all the other things that he did over his career. But we have to mention one more thing about PEDs with David Ortiz, because there's a lot of people who are contacting me who are confused, thinking that he is also a steroid user and a caught steroid user. David Ortiz was flagged in 2003 as a possible positive test when the union and the owners were trying to figure out, were they going to test for steroids? I was in baseball at the time. We were doing secret testing to see whether or not enough players would test positive that would trigger a testing program. The results of those tests were supposed to remain confidential, and there were going to be no punishments for players who tested positive during that time period. Also back then, we did not have the best technology, so we're not positive when we had those tests. Were they real tests? Just like with COVID, is it a fake positive? Is it a fake negative? There could have been people who tested negative who were definitely on steroids and people who tested positive who definitely weren't. So there wasn't as clear a picture. And Rob Manfred, the commissioner, came out 5 years ago and said, listen, everyone who's on that list, David Ortiz is one of them, you can't assume that they actually took steroids. If they didn't test positive again, you can't assume that they took steroids. And he singled out Ortiz. And that gave the writers the opening to vote for Ortiz without voting for Bonds and Clemens.
He is longtime Marlins president, now baseball analyst for CBS Sports HQ, and podcast host David Sampson with us here live after hours, CBS Sports Radio. Just briefly, before we move on from David Ortiz, I promised my listeners we could hear this iconic moment when he really solidified his status as one of the top athletes in the Boston area in New England. And so I know you'll appreciate it. This is right after the Boston Marathon bombing.
This jersey that we wear today, it doesn't say Red Sox. It says Boston. We want to thank you, Mayor Menino, Governor Patrick, the whole police department, for the great job that they did this past week. This is our city. And nobody gonna dictate our freedom. Stay strong. Thank you.
Oh my goodness, what a moment. I'll never forget it. I was crying. I still get chills listening to it, but I know it's forever associated with David Ortiz and that moment where he took charge and became a Boston athlete for life. It's after hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Okay, so back to this conversation we're having about the steroid users or the suspected steroid users. You mentioned that this is a situation where you don't think they're going to get in at all, David. So you don't believe at any point, even when we get to, say, Veterans Committee or any other path, that they're ever going to end up in the Hall of Fame.
You're talking about specifically the fact that Bonds and Clemens are now off the ballot. A-Rod still has 9 years to go.
Right. I'm sorry. Bonds and Clemens I'm referring to, yes.
Yeah, so Bonds and Clemens can get in as early as the 2022 winter meetings when the Today's Game Committee meets. And that's made up of players and executives and members of the media. And if they get the required three quarters from that smaller group, they could get in next year. I just would not hold your breath if that happens. It's extremely rare for players to get in that way. And it's even more rare for players who have such a tag next to them. In other words, there's no surprise why Bonds and Clemens did not get in. Those committees are meant to correct wrongs, oversights, to correct mistakes, to correct injustices. They were created for oversights, right? It is nobody forgot about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, if you think about it. The writers who did not vote him in, that was their intention not to vote him in. So it's very unlikely that the Today's Game Committee would reverse that. That said, they will have their shot with those committees, and that is why you saw what the Giants did, which I've never seen in my career, and I'm going to talk about it on today's Nothing Personal. The San Francisco Giants released a statement after Bonds did not get in. Very, very interesting, outlining all of his records and what he meant to the franchise and what an injustice it is that he is not in the Hall of Fame and the hope that it will be changed going forward by this committee.
Okay.
Very interesting that the Giants and Bonds, who have had a lot of problems in their career as an organization and player getting along, they are now trying to help him get into the Hall of Fame.
Okay, now you also said because they didn't cop to it, and many people point back to Pete Rose, not so much Hall of Fame argument here, but just the fact that he lied about it, why they won't let it go, that he only admitted it when he wanted to sell books. So in your opinion, David, if Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens would all of a sudden have this change of heart and come clean and detail a PED usage that's been suspected. Alex Rodriguez, of course, we know he's already done it. But would that change the minds of anyone? Would it have changed the outcome?
I think it would have, but now it's too little, too late, never going to happen. And it's not that people don't deserve a second chance. I'm not saying that. And you could say that everyone's innocent until proven guilty and they've never tested positive, so they're above reproach. There is no one in the game, not one writer, not one executive, not one player who doesn't know that Clemens and Bonds use performance-enhancing drugs. It's not a dirty little secret. It's nothing. It's just known by all of us who were in the game all of those years. So them taking the podium right now and saying, oh, my bad, I should have told you from the beginning, that's the sort of thing that happens in Hollywood maybe to try to get another role, another part. but that's not going to work for the Hall of Fame.
Okay. I want to just give you my brief. It's very brief. I'm not going to go into my whole dialogue here, but the reason I believe that they should be in the Hall of Fame, because I think the Baseball Hall of Fame, like any Hall of Fame, is supposed to tell the story and preserve the history of a sport. And so whether or not you have to create a wing for all of these PED users or the ones that were suspected, it's not like these are the only two. They just happen to be the ones that are most severely punished, maybe Alex Rodriguez as well. So do you believe they should be in the Hall of Fame, David, as someone who spent his career in baseball?
I understand what you're saying, but I want to make it a little more detailed, if you don't mind, Amy.
I don't mind.
I believe when you say a wing, I'm good with that. If you want to make a museum part where you talk about the Black Sox and you talk about Pete Rose and you talk about Clemens and Bonds and eras that have taken place in baseball, that's fine. But that doesn't come with your own plaque, right? You don't get to be in the plaque room. You are not known as a Hall of Famer. You do not get to be invited to induction and sit on the stage with the Hall of Famers. If you want to have something in the Hall of Fame Museum, which is an exhibit, I have no issue with that at all. And that may be an exhibit. You'll have a hard time getting sponsors to build it. MLB certainly will not give the revenue. And MLB has a large part in the operating budget of the Hall of Fame. But you will not get MLB to sponsor such. But if Barry Bonds wants to buy an exhibit, I wonder what Rob would say. Where the question was asked, why don't we just have a wing or a room that we'll build where we put pictures of us and give our stats? But that's it. That is something that I think should be considered.
How can we be so sure that there are not other PED users already in the Hall of Fame, David?
You can't. You know the answer to that. You can't ask such an absolute question and try to trap me. Even at 5 o'clock in the morning, I would say that the odds are there are plenty of people in the Hall of Fame who have done steroids, and there are plenty of people in the Hall of Fame who are less than exemplary men, obviously. I think the difference with Bonds and with Clemens is the level of deceit over the period of time of that deceit.
David Sampson, longtime Marlins president and the host of the Nothing Personal podcast, which will, of course, feature many of these opinions and more when he has more of his time. He's also on CBS Sports HQ with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. The Hall of Fame is the big story, of course. We're also hearing, though, that there is movement, maybe a bit of the melting of the iceberg, if you will, between the baseball owners and the Players Association. Are you worried at all? Because the last time I talked to you, you said, no need to panic. There's plenty of time.
Yeah, so the type of melting that's going on, I would still let my kids ice skate on the lake. But I'm certainly paying attention to the weather changes. That's where I feel we are, right? There's still plenty of ice left, and it's thick enough to withstand my weight. That said, the meetings are good. The process is happening exactly as it's supposed to. There is normal movement by both sides, which both sides regard as no movement, might I add. But each side is moving enough to elicit a you're not moving response. Wink, wink. We know you're moving a bit, but you're going to have to move a lot more. So all of that is part of this middle process, as I've been calling it. The beginning of the process is when no one's talking to each other, everyone's angry, no one's sending proposals back and forth. The beginning of the middle of the process is when you start these meetings where you're pretty much saying things that you know you're not going to get, asking for things that you're not going to get. You're being asked to give in things that you know you're never going to give in. That's sort of the beginning of the middle. Now we're going to see negotiations over the next 7 to 10 days where there's even a little more movement. A few more things get agreed to. You get a little closer on some of the issues, like minimum salary, like revenue sharing, redistribution, some of the issues you've read about. But everything that your takeaway should be, this is normal. There is still the possibility of a spring training delay, still the possibility of a changed schedule of some sort, because there's a whole off season they have to have before spring training and the season can start. But you don't have to worry, as I've told you and your listeners from the beginning, there will be a postseason this year. There will be a full season where you will feel that if you win your division and win the World Series, that you have won a real non-strike shortened season and World Series trophy. It just may not be an on-time start. That's all.
Who wins when all the dust settles? Who wins?
I love that question. There is no way to know who wins a collective bargaining agreement that is a fair one until you are about halfway through it.
Ah.
In an unbalanced collective bargaining agreement, like the one that we signed in 2016, we knew as owners and presidents that we won that the minute the signatures were dry. If it is a more balanced agreement, which is what each side is aiming for, well, the owners aren't aiming for that, but the players certainly are. But if it is a more balanced agreement, then neither side will be able to claim victory until you're about halfway through and you see how certain provisions, what the results of those provisions are. So if you get rid of draft pick compensation for free agents who have qualified offers, what happens? Is the market for those players, does it get bigger? If you have a revenue sharing change, does that mean that large markets are signing more players? If you increase the threshold of the competitive tax threshold, are the big teams' payrolls going higher? We won't know those things until we actually have a season or two under the new rules. With eight teams going into a lottery, will there be no more tanking, as an example?
Mm.
And if teams aren't tanking, does that have an impact on their rebuild? Does it mean that fewer teams are tearing it down to try to rebuild, even though it's been established that that is the right way to operate? So if those things change in this new agreement, it will take 2.5 years for either side to really come to an understanding of the actual impact of the agreement that they signed back in 2022.
Great stuff. But before I let you go, how did you enjoy being father of the bride?
So I watched, thank you for asking. I watched my daughter walk down the aisle. She's 26 years old and she's walking toward me. And I was standing under the chuppah, which is where you get married in a Jewish ceremony. And I was looking at her and all I kept picturing was that I used to change her diapers.
Oh, no.
Right? Like, I'm watching her, and I'm thinking, is this possible that now, because to me, I'm the same age as when she was born. And to me, I look the same, and I feel the same. And I watched as she walked down the aisle. I'm a big fan of movies. And I was picturing her like Hugh Grant walking through a scene of Notting Hill as times pass and the seasons pass with a song playing. I was watching her grow from a baby to a teenager, to a college student, to a graduate student, to a fully formed woman with a veil on. Oh. And all that was happening walking down the aisle. So it was a pretty out-of-body experience.
Did you cry?
I did not cry on the bima. I did not cry during the ceremony because Hannah, my daughter, was so upset that it was so hot and she was sweating. And it was my job to make it cold. And I thought before the ceremony started that I had made it freezing, and people apparently in the audience were freezing, but I didn't take into account the lights on the stage. So she was dripping, talking to me during the ceremony with the rabbi talking to her and her about-to-be husband, and she's saying to me, why isn't it colder? So I'm thinking, what do you want me to do?
Aww.
Like, should I walk off the stage? Should I call someone? I want my handkerchief? So all that's going on. So I'm distracted. I'm not crying. I'm smiling.
Aww.
She's despondent that she's sweating because she thinks the makeup is running and this and that. Meanwhile, it ended up being great.
Good.
Great time, great dancing. So the moment of tears came as I watched them do their first dance, and I realized that she had a new dance partner in her life, and that dance partner was her family now and her life now. And the attachment to me and my family was split in a way that had never happened before.
Mm. Oh, well, congratulations, Daddy. That means that you raised her well, the fact that she can go and do this And the fact that she can still be upset about heat even when the rabbi is talking to her, I love that. So you can find the picture of David and his family, it's awesome, on his Twitter, at David P. Sampson. Of course, you're going to see and hear a lot of him today, CBS Sports HQ, Nothing Personal podcast, and longtime Marlins president, which is where he gets so much of this insight from. You are the best. Thank you so much. Live at this hour, you always bring it. I cannot trip you up.
Hey, have a great day. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, way over, but thankfully no one's waiting on us, and David was worth it. Good stuff from him. I know that I can ask him anything, and while he may pause and take a breath, he will respond in a thoughtful and insightful manner. So hope that you now have some food for thought, kind of baseball to chew on as we process the Hall of Fame announcement. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Three receivers now to the right side, but a tight formation. Taysom will keep it, throws to Kamara. Kamara, 10, 5, touchdown, Alvin Kamara on the reception. Right side, near sideline, Saints touchdown, 12 yards.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I say this was one of the greatest coaching jobs of Sean Payton's career. I mean, there's been other stretches where he's been brilliant, but to keep this team together, limited Alvin Kamara, no Mike Thomas, can't guard Mike all season long, four different starting quarterbacks, the transition following Drew Brees' exit. They even tried to get Drew or Phillip Rivers to return. They were that desperate. But I've also said, even before hearing from Peyton on Tuesday, that the wear and the stress of this year had to be weighing on him. And that's exactly what we heard, even as he shared his future plans in a special press conference Tuesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Sean Peyton, Saints, they'll always be synonymous. So many incredible moments and certainly the fabric of the city. As we talked about with David Ortiz and Boston in the wake of the marathon bombing, Sean Payton, Drew Brees, those Saints, they helped to bring life back into New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Sports have the power to heal, and he will forever be synonymous with that healing process.
My plans are not to be coaching in 2022 in That's just how I feel. The attention to details are so important that it can be exhausting. And so I felt as this season was winding down that it was the right thing. And then the last week and a half, yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I don't like the word retirement. Mr. B didn't like it either. He always said, you know, retirement's overrated. We get sold this whole image of retirement by these investment groups on TV and golf courses and retirement. I still have a vision for doing things in football, and I'll be honest with you, that might be coaching again at some point. I don't think it's this year. I think maybe in the future, but that's not where my heart is right now. It's not at all. I don't know what's next. And look, I read the reports and I understand. I've not spoken to anyone from a media outlet relative to doing television or radio. Maybe that opportunity arises, but every time I read something that says, like, he's in line for this job, I'll call my agent, Don, and I'll say, Don, did you hear something? Because I have not heard anything. And that's okay. I think I'd like to do that. I think I'd be pretty good at it. But so stepping outside, like in the cold weather today, and being a little uncomfortable professionally or from a career standpoint is okay.
But while you are in limbo and don't know what you're going to do moving forward, I mean, you might as well just put the word out there that you're open for job ops.
I'd like to try TV. And I've had some opportunities. I talked to Drew a little bit about it last night.
Of course.
I don't know that part of it that well, but that'd be something that would interest me. And so I think the hardest part is sitting in your chair saying, wait a minute, you haven't talked with a network yet. You haven't talked with, like, not a word. Hopefully that opportunity comes.
Sean Payton could very well return to coaching, but I think a lot of people believe that same thing about Bill Cowher as well, because he was so good at it and because players adored playing for him. But he got to his quote-unquote cushy TV job and never went back. Of course, had some family challenges. His daughters, they were playing, I think one of them was playing volleyball, North Carolina State maybe. His wife went through cancer. And so there are a lot of life situations that kept him away from football, and it was never quite the right time. But let's be honest, he doesn't want to give up his cushy TV job either. And that's the funny thing about coaching versus talking about coaches or talking about athletes is when you only have to do it once a week and you can golf the rest of the time and the money's really good, it can be awful tempting never to go back to that stress where football is all-consuming. No doubt that's what Drew Brees told him. Because Drew Brees is enjoying it now. So we'll see what happens with Sean Payton. But synonymous with healing in New Orleans, synonymous with that city and the way that he was able to guide a team to a Super Bowl when it was so desperately needed. And I love that. I don't always understand it. I just know that sports brings us together and it does have the power to heal where many other elements and circumstances cannot. And I really love what the New Orleans Saints put on Twitter, so I just want to read it really quickly. You became our coach after the biggest natural disaster in U.S. history hit our state. You forever changed the culture of our organization, bringing us to unbelievable heights. Our gratitude for the impact you have made on our state, city, and team is immeasurable. Thank you, Sean. And then one line from the Louisiana governor's tweet. You came to New Orleans at a time when spirits were broken and hope seemed lost, but you gave the city and fans something to rally behind and be proud of. And those will never be taken away. I hope it's not the last we've seen of Sean Payton, but man, those cushy TV jobs sometimes are too hard to ignore. Coming up next, Jerry Jones is going to give you the definitive word on Mike McCarthy. Aaron Rodgers is... well, he's back to talking about Aaron Rodgers all the time. And Sean McDermott, he's in pain.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
One man to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown!
Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touch the center salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
The people have spoken, and one score stands above the rest. Here is your TD of the week. The Kansas City Chiefs.
Mahomes looks to throw it. Pump faking right side. He wants it. A comeback cut. It is caught by Kelce. Touchdown! Kansas City, one of the greatest duos in the history of the National Football League. Patrick Mahomes to Travis Kelce on a push fade comeback. And the Chiefs have won this incredible divisional playoff game in overtime.
Go out there and put our entire goals, dreams, aspirations out there. And just bleed for every single person on this team and every single person in that stadium wearing red, man. That was a fun experience.
Travis Kelce, touchdown. Travis Kelce, the man, talking about it afterwards. He is one of my favorite characters in the NFL. And he and Patrick Mahomes are a duo and a match made in heaven. Very productive duo, obviously, but the two of them get each other. They go back and forth on Twitter often, and the most recent exchange is hysterical. If you haven't seen it, Jay, did you use our show Twitter to reach? Okay, so if you haven't seen it, what Evan McPherson refers to as the mic'd up people, they have done their work and they have put together the audio montages of those who were mic'd up for what was about the most perfect football weekend we could have asked for. Travis Kelce is just a snippet of this. It's had more than 3 million views, but the NFL retweeted it yesterday. It's amazing. When the Buffalo Bills took the lead with 13 seconds to go, Kelce was walking up and down the sideline, first talking to Tyreek Hill, then talking to Patrick Mahomes about what he saw and what was open. Wouldn't you know, very first snap, what happens? Well, Tyreek Hill goes where Travis told him. And then the next one, they're talking behind the line of scrimmage. Kelce again tells Pat what to do with the ball and where he's going and worked to perfection to set up Harrison Butker for the 48-yard field goal that sent the game into overtime. Check it out on our show Twitter. For those of you who are Bills fans, maybe you can't stomach it. I think that you're in the same space as one Sean McDermott. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. A lot I want to cram in here before the top of the hour. And we really didn't even get to basketball. I know Brad Heller and Bob Uesler both covered it, which I appreciate. But there were some big storylines in basketball last night as well, like the Clippers coming back from 35 points down, Anthony Davis returning. The Boston Celtics beat the Sacramento Kings like a drum, just bad stuff. So we'll get more and more into basketball, but still some big storylines coming out of football. So Sean McDermott and Josh Allen, the other Bills, did their exit interviews on Tuesday. And McDermott was very honest and I think very raw still about those 13 seconds that prevented the Bills from getting to the AFC Championship.
I watched it on video and I watched it over and over in my head a million times and in my stomach a million more. That's what we do. As was mentioned earlier, it's my livelihood and you know, I'm super competitive as well, and I want the best for our football team, this organization, and our fans, quite honestly. So I'll continue to watch it in my mind and in my gut for years. And, you know, it's something that I'm going to – but when we get to where we're trying to get to, I believe that that'll make it that much more enjoyable in that moment.
We can sit here and play the what-if game. But there's no saying, you know, we do what everybody's saying that we should have done, and they have a chance for a Hail Mary, and who knows if they catch that or not. You know, it's you can't play that game. So, you know, you live and die by the sword, and I love our teammates. I love our coaching staff. You know, and unfortunately, it's probably going to be the last time that, you know, every guy in this building is going to be here. So. It's a tough day. We understand that. But again, as to next year, we got to find a way to move forward. And, like I said, do whatever it takes to bring one home here to Buffalo.
Super proud of being in games like that. We were toe to toe, with the defending AFC champ 2 years running now, and they got a really good football team. They're well coached. They have good players. But we're right there. And, you know, we'll see what comes out this weekend in the AFC Championship game. You know, look where we were a year ago against Kansas City and look where we were this year. And that's a little bit of a measuring stick, but at the end of the day, we want to win those games and we expect to win those games.
Still gut-wrenching. And when you hear Sean McDermott say he feels it in his stomach, he watched those 13 seconds, not just with his eyes and on video over and over, but with his stomach and feels it in his gut. I know exactly what he's talking about. Aaron Rodgers also speaking out in the wake of a loss, but this one on the Pat McAfee show, as opposed to his exit interview, which I'm sure we'll get at some point this week. I feel like he's talked more about his future and himself than he has about the game. So I specifically asked Jay to give me whatever he said about the game. So I appreciate that he took accountability because this is definitely on the offense as much as it is on special teams.
A little numb for sure. Didn't think it was going to end like this. You know, disappointed in the offense. 10 points, obviously not enough. Defense, man, played outstanding. special teams obviously hurt us. You know, taking points off the board, giving them points. But offensively, you know, scoring 10 points, never good enough. Felt good about the first drive, went down, right down, scored. You know, had a good drive going the second drive for a turnover, and then just didn't put a whole lot together after that.
So he does feel it. But can I play one more cut for you that blows me away? Now, there's a lot he talked about with his future, and I even tweeted this quote that I heard earlier on Tuesday. There's not going to be a weird standoff war of silence or anything. It won't be a long, drawn-out process. And he talks about his trust and friendship with Brian Gutekunst, the Packers GM, and about his choice for the future. But if I'm a Packers fan, I don't want to hear him use the word exciting 3 days after that loss.
I don't have a fear of retirement. I felt that during the offseason. So there's not any fear around it. The uncertainty is not unsettling at all. It's almost exciting thinking about
what
life is going to look like moving forward.
No! No! Maybe you feel that way. Don't express that 3 days after your faithful fans have had their hearts broken by the ineptitude of your team in the snow on the frozen tundra. Negative. We could play so much more about Aaron Rodgers talking about him and his future. We don't know anything, so that's just the case. It's still up in the air. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. For those of you who have maybe put to bed the end of the Dallas Cowboys season, it doesn't hurt quite as much. Maybe you're not calling for Mike McCarthy to be fired. Well, that's good, because you probably weren't going to get the satisfaction.
Just for the record then, Jerry, have you had a specific conversation with McCarthy about his return as the head coach?
I'm not going to get into any conversations that I've had with anybody relative to anything to do with the staff. I understand the interest in it, but there's nothing compelling me. I've got everyone under contract that I want to have under contract, and so that's where we are.
I don't necessarily agree that time heals all wounds, but I do think that time is a benefit, and time is a healer for those of us who, as sports fans, feel the defeats so deeply and so painfully. Time is a blessing. The fact that it marches on, it's supposed to can feel like a curse when we're talking about people that we miss, but it's also a blessing because it lessens the acuteness of the emotion. And I know you understand what I'm talking about, sports fans. Sometimes you just don't get over them. I don't know if the Bills get over this one super quickly. It doesn't sound like Sean McDermott will. But for those of you Cowboys fans who are over it and want to move on, you would like everyone and all of them to be fired. Well, it's not going to happen. Jerry Jones, owner GM on our Dallas affiliate 105.3 The Fan. Everyone is under contract that he wants to be. Don't know if that means Dan Quinn is staying. Probably not. Don't know about Kellen Moore. I don't think he's interviewing quite as well as Dan Quinn, but those are all questions that maybe we'll have answers for tomorrow. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.